breaking into his back. Not only is this man a survivor, he's a thriver. We're talking, you know, drugs, abuse, divorce, success on TV, Roots, The Waltons, Little House on the Prairie, Everybody Hates Chris, just to name a couple of things he's done. He is best known, of course, as Willis on the iconic and groundbreaking half-hour comedy, Different Strokes. He's the author of the book, Killing Willis, which is a great read, because he tells it like it is. He's also a stand-up comedian, just on his off time. Mr. Todd Bridges is next. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Lives. Breaking into.
That's right.
I know.
Beyonce's crazy. Hi, you guys. Breaking into, and I'm with the survivor. Okay, let's start out with that. I'm James L. Jr., your host, and welcome back to the show. I am so fortunate to do shows where I have full circle moments, and my guest today is someone that I admired all these years, and I grew up watching. We're about the same age, so it's not that far off, but I had to watch him on my TV. He, to me, one of the most underrated child actors in the 70s and 80s, and we're going to talk about each of that when we get into this. Yeah, and I already gave you the big intro and beginning of who he is. We're just going to go right into it. Mr. Todd Bridges.
Hello, how are you?
Sir, I'm trying not to fan out.
Thank you.
In all seriousness, thank you for being on the show, taking time out to be here. Everybody from our time period, they're so excited. People are watching. It's live. People are watching. They're excited. Can you say hi to the fans out there?
Hey, everybody.
He's here. He is here. We're going to break
it down. I'm here, and I'm alive. Well, they said I died on the internet like 4 times.
Yeah, okay.
And you know, that's the weirdest thing. To read when you dead is weird. Like, I was reading one time and said, Todd Bridges died in a car accident in Lancashire and Zapova. And I went, well, I won't be driving that direction tomorrow. I'm going to prevent that death.
I know where that is. Okay, so I was going to ask you, when they have these hoaxes or these misprints, things, it must be weird as you go, wait a minute, I'm dead?
Yeah, well, it's just the craziest thing. You know. And sometimes the sad part about it is it gets to your family before you realize what's going on. And if you're working and your phone's off or something and they can't get in touch with you, they start to worry. And that's what happened when it first happened. That's what happened. I was in Fry's looking around for the new stuff. And that's when the phones were kind of like, the phones weren't the greatest.
Oh, yeah, back then.
Yeah, so when you were in an electronics store, it didn't work.
I wonder why.
Just didn't work. So for an hour and a half, because I used to just walk around. You know, I like electronics. So I walk around and you drool at looking at stuff.
Yes, I'm going to get that one.
You know, so... You know, for an hour and a half, my wife at the time, my mom, my brother, my sister, my son, they all thought I was dead. And that was horrible.
That is no laughing matter on that part. That's horrible.
It was terrible. It was really terrible.
Well, I guess it means you're famous when it was a hoax of your death.
Yeah. Well, so what I always do is when they say it about my friends, I just call them and say, hey, you still alive?
Yeah, exactly.
And they go, yeah. I go, good, all right, because you was dead an hour ago. I'll talk to you later.
It happened to me, a couple people I knew. I was like, are they dead or alive? They were alive.
Yeah.
They're still alive. Yeah. Thank God they were still alive.
Yeah.
Now, you guys know I'm wearing a shirt that says, I'm what Willis was talking about. One of the things that's really amazing about that, about the whole what's talking about Willis thing, you are one of the few, it's one of the few instances where you are part of a saying. Usually someone has like dynamite or whatever, they have a saying.
Yes.
You're part of it. So forever, you're linked to that saying.
Yes. That it is. They did a show, I think it was on, one of the things was NBC or something like that, about the largest ever catchphrase. And everyone said it was what you're talking about, Willis.
Wow.
Everyone was saying that. And it was like Rob Lowe said, everyone said it. That is the biggest catchphrase of all time. It will not go away. It's just, that is the largest catchphrase. And even kids know the catchphrase and don't know the show.
Right.
That's what's really funny.
Yeah, that's where it comes from.
Because it was a friend of mine that I had dated, and she was with her children. They were in the car, they said, what you talking about, Willis? And she said, where'd you hear that from? And they go, oh, that's from The Hangover. And she's like, no, it's not.
Funny.
And they go, yes, it is. They were arguing with their mother going, yes, it is. She goes, no, it's not. Trust me. It's not. You know, and the great part about it now, the show's on again.
Yeah.
It's running again all over the place. So it's catching on again. And I think people are realizing that, you know, more family shows are needed again. They need family shows again now.
Well, we're going to talk about it. We're going to actually go into that right now. And first... let's show a little clip.
Oh, you got a clip?
Oh, of course. I got clips all over the place. Love that.
Sure,
the same
teach
throw.
Me, Willis.
Loved
it. If I could teach Arnold how to dance, I could teach anybody.
Why was it hard?
Listen, Arnold is living proof that not all of us have rhythm.
I love that line.
And that was the truth.
He couldn't do it.
Okay, Emily, let's
Michael
see
Jackson. Move.
I promise you won't
work. Don't touch you. Get enough. Let's play a song.
Not too bad. You just gotta loosen up a little bit like this.
I love it.
You can tell that's definitely early 70s dancing.
Sure, totally.
Thanks.
So I want to show that because that's just an example of just how this show is what, from 78 to like 80-something, 85?
It went from 77 to 86. And it would have went longer. It was actually, we were going to get a five-year grace period, but they had difficulties with Gary Coleman's agencies and stuff like that. Okay, so that's why they ended up, they canceled a top 10 show.
I don't know, it's a huge
hit. And then ABC picked it up, and then they had problems too, so they finally just ended the show because they couldn't deal with it anymore. They couldn't deal with those agents.
There has been some criticism that I wanted to ask you about because we're on Black Hollywood Lives. We talk a little blacker. Mm. I love the show, and I thought the show, compared to some of the other ones that were on that time period, was about heart.
Yes.
Now, there's criticisms of, well, like that show in Webster, white person saves black kids. It was more than that. It wasn't that.
Okay,
that wasn't
what the show premise really was. It wasn't the fact that a white man saved the black kids. It was the black kids actually saved the white man because they made him understand that there is a huge difference between those two. But then with love is what conquers all. So what he did was he realized that his mother was racist on the show. He told his mother off, actually. Mm-hmm. And he realized that this school that he'd been donating money to for years was racist, so he stopped donating money. It changed Mr. Drummond's life, actually, it changed our life also. Because if you remember, Willis's character was very defiant for, he didn't want to be there.
He
felt that Mr. Drummond had no idea and could not relate to him. And the more and more he started to understand Mr. Drummond, he realized that when love is involved, love conquers all. So, you know, so it was a very a show that was watched by all races.
It was.
And we always had a story, mm-hmm. and we always had a point. We always presented a point. We dealt with racism. We dealt with child molestation. We dealt with so many subject matters that people were afraid to touch. We actually touched those matters.
You did.
And we helped a lot of people.
I know you
did. A lot
of people. I'm glad you said that. No, you did. I always felt it was about the show center was heart.
Yeah.
And that you really did. It was more of like, yeah, he came to kind of help you guys out.
Yep.
But it turned, which happens in life all the time.
Yeah.
Things seem one way, but then it becomes another way.
Yep.
And in the end, everyone wins.
That's right. And everyone won, and that's what ended up happening. Yeah. And it not only did everyone win, it made a lot of other people in the United States win, too. Because they started realizing that it's dumb to be racist, it doesn't make any sense, you know. And you know, you judge a person on their character, not the color of their skin, you know. And that's why the show was so successful.
It was. And now, did you know when you first started that Gary would be so huge?
Well, it's interesting because when we first started the show, what they did was, which was smart, was they put like me around Gary because I was a dramatic actor. So
yes,
I had to always deliver the lines for him to say something funny. Mm-hmm. See, and the thing about comedy, what people don't understand is the most important person are the ones who deliver the lines for you to say something funny. Mm-hmm. Those are the most important people. If they don't do it right, then you can't say anything funny.
That's true.
You know, so that's why they surrounded me, you know, with me and Conrad, because we were actors. We already had a lot of experience.
Yes.
And when I came into that show, I actually came off of Fish.
Yeah, I remember.
And what happened was Fish got canceled. Mm-hmm. And when Fish got canceled, Barbara Bergliotti knew that I was, because at first, Different Strokes was written for just Conrad and Gary Coleman.
Oh.
And Conrad said, no, he needs an older brother. So they couldn't find an older brother at first. And they were like, and then all of a sudden when Fish got canceled, Barbara Bergliotti said, we got somebody. We have to get him. So they called me and they asked me that. I didn't even audition. They asked me that I want to do it.
Oh.
And I had actually had auditioned at the same time for another show, Mork and Mindy.
Oh.
And the Mickey Mouse Club. And I had gotten all three.
Wow. So how'd you choose? What made you?
I wanted to be an older brother.
How funny.
You know, so, and then thank goodness that I did, because Mork and Mindy, I mean, Mork, it was called Mork from Ork, changed to Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
And then the Mickey Mouse Club didn't last long. So I think I chose the right choice.
You chose the right one. Yes.
I chose the right choice.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
And you were like, for me as a black child, and again, we're not that much different in age, black child, it was so nice. I wanted an older brother like you.
Yeah, Willis was a very caring older brother about his little brother. But also his little brother was always the one that reminded him about what his mother would say and what his mother said. So Willis always had to listen to that because he would say, you know, we're doing this for mama, you know, and Willis would, you know, think about it and be like, yeah, you're right. I got to go along with this. So I remember there was a conversation between Willis and Mr. Drummond, and Mr. Drummond said, give me a chance to prove to you, you know, how much I love you guys. And Willis said, okay, I'll give you a chance to prove it. And there was even an episode where Willis decided that Mr. Drummond should not spank Arnold, that Willis should.
And then
Willis realized that he should not do that. Willis was not old enough, and he was not mature enough to do that, and he realized that Mr. Drummond should do it. And no one liked doing it.
Yeah.
But Willis realized that he was wrong. You know,
yeah,
and a lot of times that's why what you're talking about Willis was always geared toward me, because Willis would always do something crazy. You know what I mean? So it was always thrown at me. and actually how it got created, it was a typo.
Oh.
Okay, back then they have typewriters, not computers.
Yeah, typewriters.
So they actually messed up and they wrote in there, it's supposed to be what are you talking about? But the typo was what you talk about Willis. So Gary Cromer said, what you talking about, Willis? And then when they said that, everybody started laughing. They went,
hello.
They started giving signals.
Ding, 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 ding,
and
ding.
And then it became this. It's not in the script this week. And sure enough, during that second writing stage, it was like, there it is. And then it's for Willis again doing something crazy. You know, say it again. You know, so it got to the point to where, like I said, I hear it like at least 50 times a day.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure
I hear it all day long. And it depends. And if, when I hear it, you know, I won't turn around. If they call me my name, I will turn around.
Okay,
if they say that, I just keep walking.
I respect that. While we're in here, we got people watching. And Ray Goldring, I'm saying hello, says, what's up, Todd Bridges? You're an inspiration actor, and you inspire people to never give up. And shout to us.
That's, you know, something that what I always said is the true meaning of failure is not to try. And one thing my mother always taught me is never give up. Keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing until you make your dreams come true. You know, and again, my dreams are coming true because I never gave up, you know, and it's weird because I was thinking about retiring, you know, and like quitting and just getting out of it. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden things sort of happened and I realized that there's no retiring and I'm going to be coming back with a vengeance.
Good.
And,
good.
You know, and, you know, it's because I care for people. I care for people. I care for my family, you know, and I think that.
And you're talented.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, you are. No, you're talented. Thank you should you. Be out there. You should be doing stuff.
Yeah. And now things will take place now. You know, things are, my talent will be, you know, we put to the test and I will prove again, you know, because I was one of the youngest dramatic actors of black kids.
We're going to talk about that. No, I get that in here. We're going to talk about that in a second. I'm going to show a clip too of, as a clip I'm going to show, it's really good too, but we're going to talk about that because you're very underrated.
Yeah.
Regina, I'm sorry if I say your last name. I'm sorry, but Regina, this is one of my favorite shows growing up. It was ahead of its time, which I agree.
Mm-hmm.
It actually helped Regina express sexual abuse that was happening to her.
Yes.
We talked about that too.
We dealt with very serious issues.
And you dealt with drugs, and you had Mrs. Reagan on your show.
Yeah, we sure did. We sure did.
Okay, just say no. Right. Not many shows have Mrs. Reagan on their show.
Yep. And then not only did we have Mrs. Reagan on the show, Ronald Reagan, President Reagan came to see the show, and the whole entire audience was CIA, was the Secret Service, and they didn't laugh at none of our jokes. But every time Nancy said something, they'd be like, ah! and every time we went in, it was scan. It was like, you know, they still had to scan our IDs. And then I got to talking to one of the guys, actually was security for her, and I looked, he showed, opened his trunk up, and they actually had in the trunk surface-to-air missiles.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was a no-fly zone at the time. Over the particular universe, it was a no-fly zone. And
what a trip.
They had everything in that trunk. So if anything went down, they were ready.
That's kind of exciting. As a kid, I'd be like kind of excited. I'd be like,
it was kind of scary.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you the scariest thing that ever happened was on the set of Silver Spoons. We went over there. They had a not the chimpanzee. They had a orangutan, me and Gary were like, "Oh, this is cool. We can watch the orangutan." And something happened, and the orangutan went crazy and started throwing people everywhere. So I had to carry Gary and run out. We were like, "Come on, Gary!" We ran out because he was throwing people everywhere. The orangutan went crazy. So Gary, lucky that I was tall enough and big enough to carry him out of there, he may have got thrown too. That orangutan went nuts, and it was funny because the first we were like, "Oh, this is so cute," and it was like, "Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh!" And I grabbed Gary and said, "Come on, woman, get out of here!" We ran out of there. And another thing that was also fun, I can tell you, me and Gary used to do, because we worked at Universal, what we used to do, the trams.
Oh, yeah, the trams, yeah.
When the trams would go by, me and Gary would freeze. So the trams would go by, and we'd go.
People would be like, that's Gary Coleman at Top Bridge.
Yeah, but they thought we were fake. We would freeze, and we'd just stand like this. And then when Jamal Bobby go and start talking to you, and they go, oh, they were real. But they're too late. They already passed out.
I love that story. That's hilarious. Oh, my goodness. Speaking of that, so one of the reasons why I get to have top producers on my show is because of our fearless leader, Maria Menounos. She has her own podcast called Conversations with Maria. It's every Friday on iTunes. She talks to influencers, celebrities.
I know Maria very well.
Yeah, Maria's yeah. great. I love Maria. She supports me in the show all the time. Cool. From health and wellness to career, relationships, finance, everything. She's like, well, for some of you, she's the big sister you wanted. For me, she's the little sister. A little older. Just go to iTunes, and just subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos. It's every Friday. Great show. Like I said, 1 week she did a whole thing on pets and how you pet care, because I love animals and pet care, so it's great. So go check it out. I want to share a quick story with you. That, okay. I went to go see Avenue Q the day Gary Coleman died.
Mm.
So I was in New York, and he died, and then I had to go to the show later. And so I was like, okay, they didn't cancel the show. At the St. James Theater on Broadway, and they didn't cancel the show. And I've been waiting to see the show for so long, and I knew his character, which is played by a woman. You have to see the show to see why, how, where it totally works.
Mm.
It's one of the leads.
Mm-hmm.
They came on, they did the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious. We laughed. I mean, you couldn't help. The show, if you ever seen it, it's really funny. It's dirty, it's funny, and all stuff. We laughed and laughed, did the whole show, and then afterwards, the woman who plays his character came out. And then she spoke. And so we know that he, because apparently he endorsed the show. That's what she said. Yeah. He endorsed the show. He saw it. And she goes, we decided the show must go on. He would understand he's an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, to honor him, do the best show we could. And then now, and we were all crying at the end. Everybody was crying.
Yeah, the interesting part about when he passed away, I was at Lake San Antonio. Okay. And I was out camping with my family. And I got the phone call that he was in a coma. And I had talked to this person, and I told her not to pull the plug because Gary was a fighter, and I thought Gary could survive it.
Okay.
But she pulled the plug on the 28th anyway, and I was very upset over that because I knew Gary lived with no kidneys, and in his 40s, which a lot of people don't live that long.
Nope, they don't.
I knew that he could probably make it through what was going on, but the simple fact that she pulled it, and then I couldn't go home for another 3 days because they were packed out of my house everywhere.
Wow.
And so they were like, just stay away from the house. Don't go home because they're there.
Yeah.
And so it's something I'm always going to remember because it's, you know, I lost everyone, you know, my cast members, you know.
That, you know, and that is amazing because you're the survivors. Yeah. Like, sole survivor.
And I was the one there I thought would go first.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know. Right. And I'm the one that's still here. But I talked to Conrad all the time before. I talked to him the day before he passed away. He didn't even know because he was, I guess, internally bleeding and he passed away. And that really hurt me because I
was he like a father to you?
He was a father to me, yeah. He was a better father than my own father was, actually. You know, and that was really sad for me that day, too, you know. And when we lost Dana, I remember when we lost Dana, that was very sad for me, too, because Dana was in, you know, I remember I had warned her about going on Howard Stern because I told her I didn't think she can deal with it. Like, see, I can go on Stern and deal with it because I can fire back at Stern. And Dana was so emotional, and I felt that the people kind of really attacked her, and she didn't know how to defend herself. But what I always tell people is just tell the truth.
Right.
Don't lie about, I did some stupid things in my life, you know, and who doesn't?
Right.
You know, and if anyone, you know, I always say, you're going to cast a stone at me, you better throw five more at yourself.
Okay.
You know,
that's
so
right.
The only difference between ours is people know about it.
Right.
That's the only difference. You know, so, you know, I accept full responsibility for everything that, you know, I made some terrible mistakes, but you know, something I made up for them.
Yeah.
You know, and making up for them is still being alive and being able to help a lot of people get through situations that they're going through and dealing with.
Well, today is National Honesty Day.
Is it really?
It is. Today's National Honesty Day. We're being honest today.
Well, I ain't going to say nothing, but I could say something really funny, but I ain't going to say it.
I'm like, say whatever you want.
No way.
That's kind of funny. But you guys were like a little tribe, weren't you? It was like the all of you were just like
Well, everyone was there. See, okay, when we did Denver Strokes, you had Facts Alive cast there.
Yes.
You had Silver Spoons. You had One Day at a Time.
Yes.
You had Give Me a Break. You had Who's the Boss, and I was the oldest boy.
Oh, funny.
So Alfonso and Ricky Schroeder used to always mess with me. They used to set my car alarm off. They used to throw water at me. So I used to always I was always having battles with them, throwing water back. And I'd catch them and throw water back at them. Or I'd give them Charlie horses in the leg, like, bam, because they'd always mess with me. And then Ricky would try to run and hide behind his bodyguard, so I'll get my bodyguard to distract him. I'd get his bodyguard taken off, and I'd catch Ricky. I got you now. But, you know, we're a bunch of kids having fun, man. We used to roller skate around everywhere. We had skates, and, you know, it was like our playground because, you know, what else were we going to do, you know? Yeah. So we played, we skated around and did a lot of things. We had a lot of fun on those shows. We had a lot of fun.
I'm sure. I'm going to show another clip, a really quick one, because everybody will kill me if I don't ask you something about this. So go right ahead, please. I'm going to show that into the clip.
Hi, Willis. Hi, Charlene. Come on in.
Oh, my God. That's when my voice was changing.
Yeah, you tell it's like, on TV.
Not wearing retainers.
I didn't want you to melt them.
She was like the cutest kid.
I want to meet
cutest
my sister, Kimberly, and my little brother, Arnold.
Hi. Nice to meet you, Charlene. Gee, you're even prettier than Willis said.
Oh, thank you.
Hey. No wonder he's willing to risk the best years of his life.
You're pretty cute yourself, too, Arnold.
Some people say I resemble Billy Dee Williams.
Hey, where's your bracelet?
Oh, it's right here. My dad flipped when he saw it. He said I was too young to be going steady. He sort of forbid me to see you anymore.
What did he say?
I forbid you to see him.
He's not much on hinting, is he?
Well, how'd you get out tonight?
Well, I told him I was going to go study at the library.
Yeah, my voice.
So let's go stay.
Is that hilarious? Yes, you pick up that. Yes. So I just want to show a little bit of that. It's just kind of funny because everyone in the world. I'm not going to ask you the same question somebody else asked about Janet Jackson, but just it is. She was actually an actress in the 70s and 80s. I mean, Good Times, of course, she played Penny.
I actually was able to pick who I wanted to play my girlfriend, and I used to watch her because Good Times was there too, also.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to watch her walk through all the time, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And I was like, she's going to be, and I told him to hire her to be my girlfriend. But, you know, we don't talk about our relationship.
Yes, I know you don't. I saw that you don't.
We don't.
I know you respect that.
Because, you know, we had a very special bond for a long time.
Yeah.
And we just don't talk about it.
That's good.
Know? And I still have, Janet is still a great woman. She really is.
I mean, she's still beautiful. Just as beautiful then.
Yep.
But that leads me into you being a black child actor, and especially in the 70s. Here's another clip I found right here, and I remember this as a kid.
Oh, my gosh.
It's hilarious. How old were you?
I think I was seven.
I'll get you put down the shoe. You didn't say that.
No, the parquet margarine.
Taste it. Butter.
Tastes good. You are butter.
Parquet.
Did you say that?
No, it was a parquet.
Parquet margarine from Kraft.
I have forgot about parquet.
The funny part about that was, I'll tell you something funny.
Please.
Is that commercial, I feel so bad because it says Todd Bridges and some white kid.
Yeah, it does.
I feel so bad. I'm like, come on, man.
I know, come on, people.
Find out what the name of the white kid was. That's terrible. Todd Bridges and some white kid. Come on.
I know, I love that. But that was so funny.
But that was one of the first ones they did. And we also were one of the first families that did Jell-O Brand Jell-O in the commercial. Way before what's his name did. And it was Betty Bridges of San Francisco. He loves Jell-O. And I go, can I have, and my voice is high, can I have some more, Mom? You know, and it's like the show you clicked with Janet, my voice hadn't dropped yet.
No,
so, you know, they say the things hadn't dropped yet. They hadn't dropped yet. So my voice was high, and then it went into the crackling is like I would go like yes, you should go, and they would leave it in.
I know.
They would leave it in. They left some of the craziest stuff in the show, like one because you know, and also when you're growing, how your feet get too big for your size.
Yes,
I fell down them stairs like four times, and I would get up, and because I was professional, I would get up and keep right on going, and they'd leave it in. They would like leave it in because it worked.
It kept right on going,
and you know he's a kid, you know, so it was pretty funny.
What I want to ask you about that is that, okay, I'm going to read some credits here because, I mean, you really were this, this actor, Roots.
I did all dramatic work before I did comedy.
Can we get there? Roots.
Yep.
Little House on the Prairie.
The Waltons.
I mean, like, you were doing stuff like...
I did a show called Circle of Children with Jane Alexander.
Let's show this scene right here because this is a scene I really want to talk
this
about.
This was, yeah. Let's see what I'll tell you about this show.
Yes, that's about this right. It's Little House on the Prairie. It's the 70s, folks.
Yeah. 70s.
Solomon?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you think of something that you dislike?
Being a nigger.
I'll explain to you why I said that. I'll explain to you why I said that.
It's just, it's so... The 70s, there's no television like it today.
Yeah, I mean, I had a really big speech in there that I did in that classroom. And what I meant by that was because, see, I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
And what happened was I ran away from my mom and my brother because I wanted to learn how to read and write, and I wanted to be a doctor. But what I didn't know was that they weren't going to let no black people be a doctor. And when I ran to this doctor, I go, "You're a doctor?" Black guy goes, "Boy, I'm a doctor, yeah, but I ain't working on no white man." He goes, "I only work on the Indians." And then that hurt me. Yeah. That really hurt me. So I was ashamed of being the color that I was because I couldn't do what I wanted to do, you know? Right. And you know, and during those areas, you could say whatever you wanted to say on shows, you know, basically. And when you see the whole show, then you understand why I said that, you know? And it made a lot of sense doing that for that particular show. And it was so funny because in the Waltz, like, "We got to get a black kid." So they go, "Oh, just get Todd Bridges."
So I'm saying, you like you popped up everywhere. Yeah, like, it was just
because I was a dramatic actor. Yeah. And the thing about it was, I was getting roles that were for white kids. They would just switch them to me.
Makes sense to me. Yeah. You always did a great job.
Yeah, and then I was in a lot of movie of the weeks. Mm-hmm. I worked with Sissy Spacek.
Yeah,
I worked with Jane Alexander. And then I'll tell you the most exciting thing for me ever was when I met Lena Horne. I was on a plane going to New York, and Lena Horne recognized me, and I was sleeping, and she told my mom, "Can she sit there?" And she sat there next to me, and I wake up, and I look, and I go,
"Lena Horne."
And she goes, "Hi, baby."
Oh, my God! I love it.
"It's so nice to meet you.
Oh, my God.
You are such a wonderful actor." And I was like, "Thank you."
Thank you, Ms. Horne.
You know, I was just so...
Yeah, no, I know. It's Lena Horne.
I hugged her. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
I got to meet all my idols. And you know, yeah, I got to meet all my idols. And that was one thing that a lot of actors at that time didn't get to do. I got to meet everybody from Lena Horne, Sammy Davis. Sammy Davis Jr. had every single recording of what I had been on. He had recorded everything. And then through him, I met Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby, Dom DeLuise, Burt Reynolds. You know, I knew all the legendary actors, and if you think back in those times, those actors were brilliant. You know, and to be able to meet all those people, you know, I mean, I even had dinner with Elvis. You know, so you know, and then Michael was a great friend of mine. You know, Prince. You know, I hung out with Prince, and you know, and concerts. You know, Prince would always invite me to the concerts. I always go to his concerts, and he was another great artist. You know, I look today, and I think that. You know, they got to get back to the roots of television, where shows are about, they mean something.
They're trying, some of the outer, like Netflix, and they're doing it.
Netflix is doing some fantastic shows, I have to admit that.
Yeah, they're doing some stuff.
I watched that new Lost in Space, and it was
good.
You know what I like about it? Penny was black, and it's not even mentioned that she's black.
No.
It's great. Mm-hmm. And she's the smartest. She's a doctor, she's smart, you know, but it's just about her being, you know, an older brother or the sister, you know, and it's really great because the lady who plays the Dr. Smith character, she is evil. She's a good actress.
Yes,
she is so good that you want to reach through and choke her.
I hate
her on that show.
Yeah, you're supposed to.
But she's so damn good at it, treacherous and terrible, you know. But I've seen some great shows on Netflix, you know, and that's why I think the major networks have got to get back to sitcoms. They got to get back to them.
I agree.
That was their bread and butter.
It was.
And they got to get back to them. They got to get back to them.
I grew up in a great age of television.
Yep.
And it just, I don't understand where, I mean, we have Black-ish. I'll give them points. They're doing some good stuff on that show. That's it.
Yeah. See, and it needs to be, I always thought that a show shouldn't be just black. It should be a show that anybody can watch. That's why I think movies should just be movies. It shouldn't be just be black movies. It should be movies. So if you have a black cast, it just make it a universal subject.
Right.
And people are going to go see it. Now, Black Panther proved, because they used to tell us that black people don't sell overseas.
Right.
And Black Panther proved them different.
Right.
Now, and that's a universal movie. See, so if you make universal shows, everybody is able to watch them.
Because then
everybody can relate to them. But if you stay on a subject matter, you know, then some people can't relate to it and they won't watch the show. But if it's a universal subject and people can learn from it, I think now it's time for kids to be able to sit in front of a TV and watch a show and learn something from that show.
I agree.
You know, and because a lot of times, a lot of us grew up on television, but we got a good education from television because right. those shows always said something. Yes, always did. Gave us something that we yes. needed to learn as children. Yes. I mean, like, think about this. You know, with those shows, you know, A, I, O, U, C, those shows taught us things. Mm-hmm. They taught us stuff, you know, and, you know, you learned the ABCs and, you know, mm-hmm. you learned all this stuff and you were smarter because you watched them shows and they would teach you and you'd sing along with mm-hmm. them, you know, as a kid, you yeah. know, and you, oh, know, I know and you yeah. knew them, you know,
yeah.
and they don't make stuff like that anymore.
They don't.
You know, they just make, you know, just slam, bam, thank you, and the comedies that are just, yes. they're fast comedies, but to me, they have to be more of, I really believe they have to be family-oriented shows.
Agree. Totally
and that will help us a lot better.
Now, back when you were running around as an actor, did you know, I mean, did you run into people like Rodney Ali Ripple and Kim Fields? Yeah, Rippy and yeah, Kim well, Fields,
Kim
all them.
Well, Kim Fields was always there because yeah. we were, Facts of Life, so was on the same lot as us. So yeah. we always were together as kids.
So Alfonso, you guys all go to the same auditions and things because you guys run into each other
No, because we all were working. But, in the beginning, me and Kim did some work together. Well, I forgot what show we did. Well, we did a show.
Oh, really?
Together. We did I think it was a comedy show. Was that Dan? No. We did some show. I forgot what show we did together. But I knew Kim Fields since she was really, really little.
Wow.
Because we worked on a lot of stuff together.
And she did a lot of commercials. She did Mrs. Butterworth commercials.
Yeah.
She did a lot of commercials
and,
like
and,
you did.
And we were always, yeah, I did over 200 commercials.
Yeah, you did a lot of commercials.
Yeah, so we were always like at the same benefits. Because at that time, Random Bar was invited to the white benefits, so you always went to the black benefits. You know, that's just how it was. You know, that's just, unfortunately, that's how it was back then. You know, and I did not, you know, that's just.
But so you guys all saw each other. I know you're still friends with Kim.
We had a lot of unity back then because
yeah, sure.
you had to. That's all we had was us.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
But, you know, our show, and that's why our show was universal. And so with everyone else, like you could watch, like anybody could watch Sanford and Son and relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he may have lived in the ghetto, but it didn't matter. He still was always universal situations. Like, I was just thinking about the episode the other day when I saw that. Every time you watch it, you laugh. Where yeah. remember when he had that antique gun and accidentally fired?
Oh,
he
yes.
thought he killed the friend across the street,
yes.
and then he melted the gun. Remember?
Yes.
He thought the police was coming for him, and the friend shows up, and he was like, "He goes, you alive?" And then they go, "That gun you have is worth a lot of money."
Yeah,
and he goes,
exactly.
"Can I still get money for this?" And he melted it. But yeah. you laugh off those yes. shows. You you watch his old shows, and you just are tickled pink because they're still funny.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think every show. The new shows are not as like those yeah. old shows were.
They're
those
not.
Old shows had nostalgia, but also had they're very well written. And I think that's yeah. why they got to also get back to the older writers who used to write those shows, start writing shows like that again,
mm-hmm.
to really build back up these networks and give them power to compete with Netflix and all these other mm-hmm. companies.
I agree with you on that one. It's crazy because, like I said, you did Roots. We show a picture of you at the Roots reunion years ago at TV Land. You guys got an award. I mean, every black person on earth was in that movie, in that miniseries.
Well, that's what I'm going to tell you. They actually ran out of black people.
let me tell you about
Roots.
Because
I was a starring
yes.
role in Roots.
Yes.
And I had
lines.
I was the only kid with lines in the home.
There was no other
kid with dialogue. I had a lot of dialogue. And the funny part about it was at one time they ran out of black people, so they said, "Oh, Todd, you got do us a favor. Put on some other clothes and go way out there and be another kid because we ain't got no more kids. We got kids to play." So I dressed up as a kid, had a little hat on my head, and I was like I was sweeping up some stuff.
But
I wasn't playing my character; I was playing somebody else.
That's
but
funny.
I had some serious dialogue, you know.
Oh, you did.
And I didn't even know about slavery until I did Roots.
Oh wow!
Because I was from San Francisco, California.
Yeah, they tell you.
And
a bubble up there.
And we're in a bubble where there was no police harassment.
Right.
Everybody got along. Our neighborhood mm-hmm. was very well mixed.
That's true.
You know, mm-hmm. people, I never heard the N-word in my entire life there.
Wow.
You know, everyone loved us. They loved you for who you were. See, they treated you how you acted. If you acted like a good kid, you got treated right.
Yeah.
You know, so when I came to L.A., it was a culture shock.
Yes, whole different
culture
yeah.
shock.
Yes.
You know, I was like mortified, you know, because mm-hmm. my mom, I'll tell you, very funny story. My mom, we're going to move to Culver City, California.
Oh, yeah, Culver City, yeah.
And so my mom on the phone sounded like a white lady, right? So they said, "Oh, yeah, Miss Bridges, your credit is perfect. You got the money in the bank." And when we showed up with all them big old afros, they was like, "We don't have no more houses here."
Oh, dang.
So my mom got one of her white friends to go in there. We bought that house anyway. And believe it or not, the neighborhood didn't care. The neighborhood was fine with it.
So it's funny. Okay, I'm glad you said that because one of my best friends, she's half Mexican, half white, but her mother is Mexican, looks like a light-skinned black woman. She always said about the nappy hair, and she always talked about that. She goes, in the 70s, she went to Downey, California to try to buy a house. And they were like, who's this black woman trying to buy a house in Downey in the 70s? Mm-hmm. Don't you want to go over here to Southgate or somewhere else? Try to put her somewhere else? She's like, no, I want to go. So it's funny you say that.
Yeah.
This did happen like less than 40 years ago.
And if you look now, you go to like Englewood, I'm seeing white people walking the street at night. I'm like, dang.
Walking their dogs. That's where I live. I live in Englewood.
But I'm like, mm-hmm. Where'd they come from?
No.
I'm like, they walking their dog. I'm like, you know,
with 20, no shame.
20 years ago, you would have got robbed. Yes. You'd have been dead. But
now they're walking. I mean, and walking with stride.
Yeah. And if you had seen a white girl walking, she was a hooker.
Yes.
You know, that's the reality of back then, you know?
It was back then, yeah.
I mean, it's crazy now, you know, that they're all moving to these areas because now they're starting to, you know, and that's why I feel so bad with San Francisco. The dot-comers are destroying San Francisco.
I lived there for 16 years.
The culture is leaving, and they gotta realize you get rid of that middle class and the poor people, you lose the culture. You're going to lose the culture of that city, and it's just going to become an ordinary city,
and nobody's going to want to go there. The last time I was there, I'm like, where are the murals?
Gone.
They're gone.
They're paying over our name, and they're kicking everybody out, building these expensive apartments. And it's sad because they're losing the culture.
I agree.
You know, and that's what we have to see. And I think finally the mayor is stepping in and trying to realize that they can't, like, because he invited everyone there, but he didn't realize that was going to happen. You know, so, you know, and that's why Los Angeles, I'm glad Los Angeles is so big, you know, that, you know, you stay in certain areas.
They still got culture.
Yeah, you can keep the culture.
I also want to bring up, Sean, this next pick. Chris Rock really did go back and find black folks for his show, Everybody Hates Chris. Because I've had four or five people on this show over the last 2 years who have been on this show, and you were one of them.
That was a fun show. And actually, the funny part about that show was I came on just for a one-day row. And after I finished, Ali LaRoy was like, do you want to be on the show? And I was doing World's Dumbest at the time, too. I said, well, you got to work around World's Dumbest. They were like, no problem.
Wow.
And he let me play with my character. So I made a really fun character.
Yeah, you did. You played something out of type, too. Like you're very,
I was something completely different than what I normally would play.
Yeah.
And the funny part about him, about Monk was, Monk was crazy, but yet he always gave, at the end of it, when he would tell Chris Rock, like Chris Rock would say, okay, what his character would say, you know, I got this bully mess. I go, he's messing with me. Well, let me tell you how to kill him. And he goes, I don't want to kill him. And I go, are you sure? He goes, yeah. I go, okay, then let me tell you what to do. And my advice always worked out. He would use it, and it always worked out to the best advantage. I mean, there was like one scene where, you know, and I made this up, and I asked Ollie, can I make it up, where his brother, Chris Rock's brother, comes in.
Oh, yes.
You know, and he comes in, and I see him, and I got a knife, man. I go, who's that kid? He goes, that's my brother. He's like, oh, well, you're lucky because I was going to stab him. And he's like, don't stab my brother. I'm like, well, I'm like, I'm not. He's your brother. You know, so, but if he wasn't, I was going to get him. You know, because I played a lot of fun with that character. Everyone, a lot of us were comedians on there. So when you got all of us together, it was buck wild, boy. It was wild.
I'm saying, people talk about Tyler Perry, who hires people. But I'm saying Chris Rock back then was hiring people.
Yes, he was.
That you didn't see. Like, I remember, what's his name? Roz from What's Happening played character on there.
He played the corner. And he was very funny. He lived in the building.
Yes.
And it's the good part about it was that's what made that show so good, was that they hired good actors on that show from past shows that knew how to do what they were doing, and we really made that show great.
Yeah. It kills me that the kid is now this young man who was on Walking Dead, and he's like doing all these things now.
He's
like,
big. He's a big kid. He's big now. He's taller than me.
Yeah, he's really taller than I am, too. He's a big one.
Yeah.
Now, another part of your past that just makes me laugh, I don't have any clips or anything. I'm not going to scare you with those, but recently you did Battle of the Network Stars, but back in the day you did Circus of the Stars.
Yeah, well, no, I did Battle of the Network Stars back in the day, too. Doom.
Okay, so how was that surreal for you, like, to be back in that kind of strange arena of stars?
Well, when we did Circus of the Stars, I did the hard stuff. I did the trapeze.
Yeah,
I was a natural gym. I was a gymnast. You know, I had double backs, double fronts on the ground. I did all that. So I was the first person to do a double on the trapeze actor and catch it and go back and make it back. And then when I tried, and then I'm going on the fifth season, I tried a triple. I caught it first time with the they have ropes on you first. I tried, caught it. So then we were going to go without it. And I went and I caught his hands, but I slipped off. And when they say your life flashes before your eyes, it is true. On the way back to the net, my life is flashing. And I can see myself dying. And I hit the back net and I flipped over, came down. I landed. I went, I'm done. I said, I quit. They go, you got to go back. I go, I ain't going back up.
Yeah.
I go,
you can't
no
make
way.
Me. You so, can't
so,
make
so
me.
So then what happened was they go, well, why don't you try the lion act? I go, okay, no problem. They gave me a whip and a chair and threw me in the lion cage, right? Now, I'm looking at these lions, and they're huge.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And they're looking at me, and they're like...
Delicious.
And I'm saying to myself, I look like cooked meat to them. So I slowly backed out, and I said, nah, I don't want to do this either. I go, what happened to the other person? They go, oh, well, we didn't want to tell you, but that lion slapped her. And I was like, oh, great, thanks. You know, you're trying to get me eaten by them lions. And you don't realize how big a lion is until you're standing next to it.
Oh, I take your word for it.
Huge.
I take your word for it. Now, where was insurance? What was going on out there? Like, they just threw you in there back in the day? Was that back in the day?
But when I did the last battle that we started, the funny part about it was, I thought that I was running fast, but boy, when you get older,
I know.
Slow up in your body, man. You are not as fast as you used to be. I raced my son about 2 years ago, and I was like, I'll beat this fool. He's crazy. And I took off, and he take off, and I'm like, he's just passing me up. I'm like, what are you doing? So I'm trying to run faster, 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 and pretty soon, he way up there, so I faked like I was hurt. I was like, I pull something. He goes, dad. I was like, man. He is way too fast for me, you know?
Yes.
Way too fast
That's
for
how
me.
Kids are. It's a little warm in here, you guys, actually. It's
kind of
a little...
Give me, just throw something to me. I can
get some really quick there, because I'm having a hot flash myself.
Yeah.
A little warm.
Well, I sweat really easy. Actually, I have a good system.
No, I sweat too easy. I sweat really easy,
when you sweat,
too.
When they say when you sweat not all your toxins all the time.
That's
which
good.
Is good for you.
That's good for you. But I am, too. I just get to think. So did you know, like, Danielle Spencer from What's Happening?
Of course. She's a veterinarian.
Oh, she really?
She's a veterinarian, I knew Danielle. Every black person knew each other.
Yes.
Because we was always at the same parties.
Yes, that's
you know,
true.
So we all knew each other very well. And we all got along really well, too, you know?
That's cool. I like that because, again, we're taught a lot of times nowadays as black people to go for that one spot right there, knock everybody down to get there. And now it's like, why are we doing that? Why don't we just say, let's ignore that. And make 5 spots and 10 spots and 15
spots.
Well,
I think the problem is that we think we're going to lose our position. Some people do. That is just not true.
Right.
There is room for everybody.
That's what I say.
You're not going to lose your position. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I got on my show.
Right.
You know, and you know, there weren't even black people on our show in the beginning. I'm talking about as far as me and Gary. And then we had a hairdresser who didn't know how to comb our hair. That's why we watched the first season, our hair was toe up, first season. You know, and I was like, you know something? This got to change. So I told them, they said, well, you go find somebody. I said, fine, no problem. I went to Watts and found Joanne Chainley. She ended up doing hair for everybody. Facts of Life, Different Strokes, all the shows, because she could do everybody's hair.
Yeah.
You know, and then, another thing was, there were no black people in the offices. And I was like, you know, I'm coming in, I don't see nobody in my color. You know, people don't know what I really did in that era. And I was there's no black people in it. So the lady from the Parkers, the producer, I got her hired. And the cool part about it was, you know, and the other lady too, I got her hired in the office. The cool part about it was when they did their shows, they did not have me on once. So that was their nice payback to me, I guess, you know. But if it wasn't for me, they wouldn't have been in the business.
Right.
I got them in the door. You know, and I'm not saying they owed me something, but at least you could have done that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So, and I think what happens is, too, you know, when you're black and you make mistakes, you go through problems, we seem to kick each other even harder instead of helping each other. And that don't happen with them. When they get in trouble, they pick each other back up and get them back on the road or go on where they're supposed to be. They do it all the time, but it seems like with us, you know, we kick each other even harder. When they kick it, then we'll kick each other even harder.
You're already being kicked.
Exactly. And if they would just pick you up and take you back, then the other people are going to accept you just as fast because they want to make money off you too. And that's the thing, you know.
Can we tell people out there the real color in Hollywood is green?
That's exactly right. That's what it is. It's green. And it's like people are, you know, the thing about it is that it don't matter. It just matters how talented someone is. They're talented. You should give them work. You should not be afraid of losing a position, you know. And it was like one time, you know, I brought a friend of mine in. I'm not going to mention no names. But I brought a friend of mine in to do something for somebody. And he ended up undercutting me and getting me out of it and getting somebody else hired. Now, how could you do that to somebody that's helping you out?
Right.
That was a terrible thing. And I told him, I said, I ain't never talking to him ever again. That's cold-blooded.
Now, I want to ask you, I'm going to come to now today, where Todd is today. You have two teenagers?
I have not two teenagers. I got a kid. My son's going to be 20 and my daughter's 21.
Wow. Yeah, they're grown folks.
They're grown now.
Having a daughter, because I have two, and they're grown too, but I have a granddaughter and two daughters. Having a daughter, what has that taught you as a man?
Well, here's the thing. I have to tell you, I didn't know I had my daughter until she was 6 years old.
I understand that story.
My daughter came in the form of a letter in the mail.
Okay.
And every time I tried to get close to my daughter, you know, her mother would move her away. You know, so I didn't get to raise her like I raised my son. I wish I would have. You know, every day, you know, I'm saddened in the fact that I can't, you know, talk to her as much because I didn't get to raise her like I should have, you know, and that wasn't my fault. You know, because my ex-wife took her in, too. You know, we loved my daughter, you know, and we did everything for her, but her mother would take her away from us every single time, you know, and we don't know what that's all about. Yeah. But, you know, my son has a great relationship with her, you know, he's, you know, but, you know, raising kids in general, I've learned one thing is not to do what our parents did, which is not explain to us things. Like, they would say, well, don't do that. Why not? Because we said so.
Right.
You know, you got to explain to people why not to do something. Because this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. Yeah. This is what's going to happen. You're going to end up doing this, end up getting that. You know, and you parents can't just say, you know, okay. Like my dad was notorious for saying, you know, men don't cry. Shit, stop crying. Men don't cry. Yeah, and that's a lie. Men do cry.
Men do cry.
And you, oh, you can cry.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's okay. You know, but there's certain places you shouldn't cry at.
Right.
But you can cry. You got to, you know, and I taught my son how to deal with his emotions for real. And my son can talk to me. If I said something that hurt his feelings, he could tell me, Dad, you know, that was, you know, and I would say, you know, son, I'm sorry for saying that. I shouldn't have said that. I apologize. Mm-hmm. Our fathers our fathers didn't apologize.
No,
not one bit.
Never.
They were always right, and they could never apologize. Right. And I think that's a terrible way to be to raise kids.
I'm glad you said the thing about the crying thing, because I cry all the time about things. I mean, for things. If I feel emotion, I feel it. And it's a release. And
yes, it is.
And because men are actually, one of my other guests on the show said before, we're bulimic in our emotions.
Yep. Not me, though, because I'll be watching movies and be crying away. But there's some movies I can't watch The Elephant Man no more. Every time I watch The Elephant Man, I'd be crying. Because it's so sad what happens to him.
I know.
I'd be crying through the whole movie. And I'll tell you about actors. We can express ourselves better when we're acting or when we're watching a movie.
Funny.
Especially when it's great actors. I love watching great actors.
Yeah,
when it's great actors, man, you be crying, like, you know, and it's good because all that emotion comes out, you know? And there's nothing wrong with being honest, you know, and telling how you feel. Like, I don't lie. If I'm not doing good and someone says, how you doing today? Man, I'm doing terrible.
Right.
You know, I can't believe I feel horrible about myself today. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
It is okay.
Give someone a chance to make you feel better.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's the thing.
I like that.
You know, don't hold it in, you know, and lie, you know, because people are always, oh, everything's great, going wonderful, you know, and then inside they're dying.
Right.
You know, that's the worst thing you could do with yourself.
I know.
You
know? And he wrote this book, of course, Killing Wills. You saw a picture of that, which the great thing about your book, I've had your book for years, and the great thing about your book, you were raw and honest.
Mm-hmm.
You were like, this is how, like you just said, just plainly, this is what happened, this is how it was. Now, next chapter. This is how it happened. This is how it was.
And the thing is that I accept responsibility. Mm-hmm. See, you know, the thing about that, but it explains how I got there.
Yeah.
And see, when people don't, they don't have no idea how I got there. They thought, oh, this guy had everything, he just threw it away. Nah.
No, that wasn't it.
It's a lot of reasons how I got to that particular road, you know, and thank God that I'm not dead. You know what I mean? You know, and I've experienced a lot of police harassment during that time, you know, and at 12 years old, a kid at 12 years old, man, when you're 12 years old and you're riding your bike and all of a sudden you got a gun pointed at your head and they're taking your bike telling you you stole it, a kid don't know how to calculate that.
No.
You know, he doesn't understand it because I thought that life was supposed to be fair.
Right.
And then you realize that, you know, they're judging you on the color of your skin, not on who you are, you know.
And you can't change the color of your skin.
No.
How do we process that when someone's going, I'm going to do this to you because of the way you look?
Yep.
And you can't. I can change my hair. I can change my goatee. And I have one, but I can't change that.
That's exactly right. You know, and it was hard for me to get through to understand that life is not fair and that people are not going to always be so great. You know, and now I've learned. You know, and I've learned a lot. But I still will give people a chance. You know what I mean? And, you know, this could, that it could have made me harden, no heart, you know, but it didn't. I have a big heart, but I now know who to trust, who not to trust, you know, and I know, you know, who to let in, who not to let in. There's a lot of, there's a lot of great police officers.
Mm-hmm. But of course.
Somebody said something very interesting, and I think it was Martin Luther King too, and it was also Albert Einstein. For someone to watch an injustice happen and do nothing about it, they're just as evil as the person doing it.
I agree.
And that's happening now.
Yeah,
and that's why I was glad in Philadelphia those people actually did said something about it and filmed it and like, well, why we not? Why we wasn't nothing happening to us? See, people are now starting to catch on that there is a problem with the way we're being treated. You know, there's a problem. You know, and it needs to change. If this country wants to get itself on the right track, we got to all work together. We just have to work together.
I agree. Brandon Larkins, who's a great actor, producer, he has great series out there. Working out another strong black man, says, hey, saying, hey, Todd, thanks for the interview. Oh, I look good at the Emmys. Thank you. I did look. I was at the daytime Emmys yesterday. So, yes, thank you. That was a thing. Thanks for the compliment. I could talk to you forever. I mean, you just have so much. And there's so much more about you that read his book and then also follow him. He talks about, like, we didn't get to the molestation stuff. We didn't get into, like, stand-up comedy. I mean, he has a lot. He has a full, rich life that he can talk to you about out
there. Well, I'll tell you about stand-up comedy real quick. Stand-up comedy is interesting because a lot of people can say whatever they want to say, and I can't. I have to say, I got to always be, like, on the line of not, because people get up there and they just say crazy stuff, and I can't. But I tell real stories that are very funny.
I'm sure.
You know, and people love it because I'm telling real life stories that I've actually really went through. You know, it was like I'll give you one quick example. Eddie Murphy was trying to get me off drugs, so he sent Rick James to my house. Now, how can you
That's a joke right there.
Yeah. How can you send somebody who was on more drugs than me to get me off drugs? And you know what his intervention was? He goes, let me see your stuff. He goes, let me take half of that because I don't want you the keys. So that was his intervention.
Let me tell you something. Okay.
That was it.
Let me tell you something. The other day, I was with DirecTV. Sorry, DirecTV, I have to call you out on this. I switched to paperless billing.
Mm-hmm.
I got in the mail a bill saying, I want to let you know if you switched to paperless billing. I'm like, so you sent me a paper to let me know that I switched to paperless billing. You sent me a paper. You could do it in an email. Like you're, I mean, like, it made things like that.
Well, but let me tell you this. When you're a computer person genius, then you don't, there's no more cable TV.
Right.
We don't deal with cable TV no more. We're over that $150 bill.
I'm getting there. No, I'm getting there, Todd. I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Oh, everything you want to watch is right on the internet.
No, that's it.
It's all right there.
You're not even joking. It is there. And we didn't even mention the Vanilla Ice fights back in 2000 either.
Well, the thing about the Vanilla Ice fight,
you beat his ass. Yeah, but I'm sorry, I'm going to say you beat his ass.
I was overweight, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and, but you beat his ass.
Yeah, but I told him, I said, look, man, I said, okay, look. Now, we're going to go out there, and I said, I hope you fighting, because I'm fighting for real. I said, I'm not going to lose to you on national TV. We had 22 million viewers watching
that. I watched it.
And Snoop Dogg was funny. Because I tell you what Snoop Dogg said to me afterwards. So I said, I hope you're ready to fight. I said, because we're going to be fighting. So, you know, I was, poor guy, I was killing the guy. And then I remember at one point, I said, okay, I'm going to let him come to me. I'm going to suck him in. I sucked him in. I went down like this, and he's punching. And they're like, oh, Todd's out of breath. No, I wasn't. I was just setting him up. Because I went boom, 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 boom. And I was hitting him on the rope. Yes. And I was trying to call the ref because it was embarrassing. I was like, whap, whap.
Like, ref, whap, well, ref, call yep, it, yep. call
and
it,
then
call
I saw
it.
Vanilla, I saw a Snoop Dogg. I was going to the elevator, and Snoop goes, Dad, oh, my nigga, what's up, brother? What's up, my brother? He goes, man, I won $5. I told him you wasn't no punk. I told him that. I told him he was going to whoop his butt. They said, they don't know you. But then he said this, I remember you when you was in the hood. I was like, oh.
Not going back to the hood.
Yeah, and it was true. They all knew about me over there when I was over there. So that was so pretty funny. But I was like, well, where's my $2,500? Give me half of that. No, okay. I'm just kidding.
I know.
But it was... It was a fight, and I felt so bad for Vanilla Ice.
You did some rough justice.
I was not going to lose.
No, you were not going to lose. Okay, so one of the last things I do on every show, and I've done this 111 times, I guess, at this point, 10 times at this point, I ask guests the same two questions. So here we go, Todd.
Okay.
Whatever first comes to mind for you, what word or phrase should we not say anymore?
What word or phrase should we not say anymore?
Yep.
Wow, that's interesting. What word or phrase should we not say anymore? Oh, well, I always think that it should, what we as Americans should be, to me, I like to be called an American, because I'm an American first. I may be black, but I'm an American.
I agree with that.
And I think we should be Americans. And I think that, you know, the phrase, you know, unfortunately, the N-word, people don't like it. But some of us use it in term of endearment.
Right, I know.
And I don't want to use it, like, if I'm around white people, we don't use that word.
Right, yeah.
But when you're around brothers, it's going to be used.
It's true.
Maybe we shouldn't say that, but unfortunately, I guess that's the only thing.
I like the other one, though. Like, just call me American.
Yeah.
Like that. Now, what word or phrase should we say more of?
I love you.
And isn't that underrated? That's so underrated.
Very underrated. Very underrated. And it's like, I love you and I respect you. You know, those things should be said, and but they're not. You know, it's like with my kid, I tell my son I love you. Yeah. And I give him a hug. My dad never did that, but I do it to my son all the time. I go, I love you. I give him a hug, and he tells me he loves me. You know, and that's the thing, because it's so important that your children and your family know that you love them and you can tell them. And there's nothing wrong with telling them that at all. Nope. You know, and but you got to really mean it, you know, and you got to be, see, and you also had to be very forgiving. See, people aren't forgiving enough, you know, and they got all these skeletons in their closet and they had the nerve to put you down. You know what I mean? And if you open their closet, them skeletons would fall out rolling. Every time they open their mouth, bones falling out their mouth. You know what I mean? But they want to act like you're the only one that done something wrong, true, you know?
Right.
But like I said, you know, and then I also think people should accept responsibility. That's another thing.
I agree. I forgive a lot of my past and whatever things have gone on. I'm living for today and living for the future. It's like you're doing the same thing.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
It's been beyond a pleasure.
Oh, thank you, man. I
appreciate it. You have to come back anytime. Definitely. It was a pleasure. So, Todd Bridges, where can they find you? First, before you go, say, my daughter Tammy loves you. Can you say something to Tammy in that camera over there?
Tammy, how are you? Your father's a great guy. And what you talking about, Tammy?
She's going to die. Oh, my God, she's going to die. Okay. You just made her day. All right. Where can they find you on social media? Because you're on social media.
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. And, you know, you'll find that I always do really good quotes. And I'm not one-sided on Twitter. I'm on both sides. If you ever read my Twitter, I'm on both sides.
I know you are.
Because there's a lot of things that are not said that should be said that people don't know about. You know, so, you know, and I always make sure people are well aware of a lot of things.
And he does respond to people. He talks to people all the time. Yeah. He knows who you are. If you do it a lot, he'll talk to you. So follow him on Twitter. I'm James Lott Jr. You can follow me where all James Lott Jr.'s are, at James Lott Jr. On all social media platforms, the Facebook page is Breaking Into. We're on iTunes. We're on SoundCloud. We're on YouTube. So you can watch us or listen to us. You want to hear our beautiful voices in your ear. And, of course, my guest next week is Mayumi McKinley. We're talking about black folks. Can get therapy. It's okay.
Yes, it is.
It is okay. I've been in therapy. We've all been too. So it's okay. And she's next, my guest next week. I'm James Lott Jr. See you next time.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram me at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.